This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. Today we're at Gulgonbarra, glorious Gulgonbarra. And the forecast said broken sunshine and a tiny risk of a shower. Here's hoping. My guides are members of the Lucy family who have ancestry here going back to the 1760s. In these ever-changing times, we're recording on November the 18th. Send us your story of the Lucys or the Cronins and of Gulgon, and we'll use it in later programmes. Write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email storiedkerry@gmail.com. Text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-7123-666. To begin, we're in the kitchen at Cronin's, which was operated as a hotel from 1880 to 1970. I'm joined from the sixth generation by Breda Lucy and from the seventh generation by her daughter Maria Ilera and by Neil Lucy. As well, we will later be joined by retired teachers Sean O'Sullivan and Donnacho Luasa. The direct ancestors of Lucy's have lived in Gulgonbarra and Ballingeary since the 1760s, according to the family tree in the hall of the family's first hotel, Cronin's. Breda, have you an early memory of Cronin's?
When I was born in 1938, I was born in the hotel and my grandmother lived here. My memories of coming over to my grandmother daily and seeing her baking the bread, and then she moved to the hotel with us in later years.
Fairy Legends and Traditions of the South of Ireland by Thomas Crofton Croker was first published in 1825. It came from the experience Croker had in Gulgonbarra, hearing a keen or quina on Patron Day in 1813. Neil, to quote him, he said, it had more of the ribaldry of the pagan rites than the Christian ones. And that was why Bishop Murphy of Cork banned the festival in 1817.
there was also faction fighting was also a part of it. So there was an altercation on the island or near the island, and I think that went down very, very badly with the Catholic idea at the time.
He really threatened the local population. Excommunication.
Oh yeah.
Anybody who attended. Maria, Cronin's is now recreated as the bar and also the restaurant that you and Breda run during the summertime.
It was always a place of fun and gathering and sing songs early in the time when people were more into the bar more. Just sitting by the fire here, I think, at night time, especially when they used to use the back bar more.
Yeah.
And sitting by the fire here and having different people in chatting and things, neighbours.
Breda, the story of this building before it became a hotel.
When the Connell came in here, it was in a bad state of repair. It was a thatched roof that had fallen in. When the Connell married Ellen O'Leary, and he lived in Gertie na Cuile, but some of his family were born in Gertie na Cuile and some in Gulgon. He had a big family, so Dan Cronin was the first member to be born in Gulgon, and that was in 1856.
It was a hunting lodge to the Townsend family, but they used to give it to other groups and families that used to come here for hunting and fishing as well. So what you did was, on your way from Macroom, you stopped in a place called Kilbarry, where the Barak Moore, who was the local agent for Townsend, he was living there. And that's where you picked up the key then for what was the hunting lodge here in Gulgon. But it was a solitary kind of only building, with it, you say, of that nature within the valley, even though there was other people living here. But there was more Bahan style of those that were still here.
Was there a story about a gentleman who used to work in Dinny's?
This huge faith, or still probably there still is good faith on the fairies in the valley, and if you go through the books like the Taylor Nancy and those, it's constant talk all the way through the book about the fairies. But one of the stories was John Cronin's story about the stagecoach that was passing up on the back road, and every time that he would hear it during the night, that was a sign that somebody was after dying within the valley or to be buried in Gulgon. And again, it is that belief in that other world which is still strong here.
In 1870, Cronin's became a hotel. Kerry salmon was a favourite dish. Why Kerry salmon?
I don't know why Kerry salmon, but salmon was a very popular dish in this hotel. Mm-hmm. Because my grandmother,
but there were plenty of local salmon caught, I'm sure, in the lake.
No, not in the lake. There are no salmon in the lake here, only brown trout.
Right.
My grandmother used to cook there on the open fire, and she cooked the salmon in the big pot over the fire.
Yeah.
There's a reference as well to Kerry salmon in Crofton Croker's article in Gulgon. This whole descriptive area of arriving Gulgon and the big group of people on the island and the well and the washing of the children and the spancels and the prayer rounds that were on in Gulgon. But leaving the island then, there's reference to all these different booths and tents that were actually there. Because it was St. John's Eve, it was a huge celebration. So in one of those, he references the Kerry salmon as being one of the main dishes that was on offer. And you're talking 1813, so it was fairly amazing, but I can't figure out why they hadn't salmon from the Borland Valley or from...
Kerry salmon was obviously better.
We won't go there.
If you came to lunch in the 1940s or 50s...
Well, the menu would be very short. Be one main course, and I know my grandmother often talked about having cooked the meat on the open fire. She might cook a leg of lamb, mm-hmm. and that would be the main dish of the day. One dessert, so it was all laid out on a table down the restaurant. And then she'd have the horse-drawn carriages coming from Macroom. They'd always had a stop here for lunch. My uncle, Denis, somebody came for lunch, an unexpected visitor. Denis would say, well, go up to the church and say a few prayers, and I might have a couple of trout for you, or I might have chicken. So Dinny might go and kill a chicken and pluck it, and or he might go out and fish for a half an hour, and he'd have trout for lunch.
That warning by Bishop Murphy to cut out all this activity, did it have any effect?
There's a follow-on in Crofton Croker as well, where he came back a number of years later, and in that travel writing he said that it was completely different at that time, that the crowd was gone. So that, I mean, Bishop Murphy did have a huge effect on him. But again, over time, then later on, again, it slowly built up, but never to the magnitude of what it was in the early 1800s.
Yeah.
But again, of course, you had huge population here as well. You were heading for 7-8 million in the country, so pilgrimage was huge.
Maria, I mean, the winter time, I know most people who are involved in seasonal things find it very hard to come back after the season, that, you know, you're into the rhythm at home, you're into doing what you're doing, and suddenly these demands.
It's nice to get back into it. You know, it's nice to be busy. The lockdown was amazing. Gugan was completely... We actually had it to ourselves for the first time ever, because in the 2 kilometre zone. So that was very unusual. But then it was lovely to get back into work and get back to busyness again and seeing people and traffic and chaos.
Yeah.
Not chaos, but...
Well, I know I heard people saying for the first time that I've heard it in a long time, saying in Killarney, that it was great to have traffic jams on the Muckross Road, you know, that things had been quiet for so long, you know.
Yeah, we had traffic jams this year for the first time ever, serious traffic jams, but it was good. It was great to see people back. A lot of people come back. We have a lot of regulars, and even to the hotel, when we were young, it was regulars the whole time. Mm-hmm. And we even had people when we were young in the hotel that came and stayed for 6 months from America, a couple, and they became part of the family.
Yeah, but do you have certain people who say, oh my God, not him again?
Oh, absolutely. Everywhere has that. We know who's who and what's what, and we kind of have a little system between us, I suppose, for who's who and what's what.
Yeah. Breda, in the 40s and 50s, Cronin's was owned by Dinny Cronin and Gogabara by your father, Connie. How did the two brothers get on?
Oh, they got on very well. My father built the hotel in 1936. It was a separate business. So we had about 12 rooms at the beginning, but Dinny had 8 rooms. Dinny had a different clientele. A lot of writers spend most of the night sitting around the fire here, telling stories, collecting the stories they wanted. Robert Gibbings, when he wrote the book Rummy, his reference to dancing in the kitchen here and the number of people sitting around the fire and singing. And
this book was first published in the 1930s, we were making out there earlier.
Yes.
And he has a lovely dedication at the very beginning of it. To the finest hotel in the world, Cronin's of Gugan Barra. Gibbings, author of Sweet Cork of Thee and Lovely of the Lee. Breda, as a very young child, you thought he was a very important person.
I thought he was Santa Claus.
Used he bring presents?
Oh, we always got presents. And on a Christmas night, when we were waiting for Santa Claus, he had a big white sock hanging on the holly tree outside, waiting for Santa. And we were amazed at how did Santa know he wanted a bottle of paddy whiskey. He came to stay for 2 weeks, and he stayed for 2 years, writing Lovely as the Lee. And then some years afterwards, he continued on with Sweet Cork of Thee.
Have those stories ever been collected? Have they ever been published?
It's the stories of...
Gugan Bardic.
The Taylor Nancy, there's a huge amount inside in that.
Yeah.
And there's also Andreas and Wienacon's Shanachas and Talura.
Shishingalair in Oscarling.
But Tachyon Berlo and Kama.
We'll go on. We're going to go over to the Holy Island and we'll talk to you from there.
A green island in Lone Gugan Barra, where a lu of song rushes forth as a night.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry
brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Lowen Googan Barra.
Six generations of the Lucy family can trace direct ancestry here to Googan Barra and Ballingeary. We're now on a small island joined to the mainland by a causeway. We're in the middle of a hermitage recreated here in the 18th century reconstruction of St. Finbar's 6th century hermitage, and the little oratory with the stained glass windows of early Munster saints, Finbar, Brendan, Ida, Coleman, Gubnet, Elton, Fachnan, all contemporaries and friends of St. Finbar. On the Sunday, on or before September the 25th, pilgrims from all parts of Cork, walkers over the mountains from Cailkill and Bantry and Priest's Leap, from Bannon and Kilgarvan in Kerry. The church dedicated in 1904. Paddock Pierce was here that night. Colosh in the Moon started in 1903. Croft and Croker's 1813 experiences, we heard of the Queena, of the prayer and celebrations, inspired him to gather fairy legends and folk traditions all over the south of Ireland. Breda, so many memories from Googan Sunday.
Well, when I was young, it was a very big day, and we had on the Patron Sunday, and you had a lot of people came in on the eve of the feast day to make the round here, and again on the feast day. It was a good day for all the young people because we had all the standings around, people selling toys for children and all that kind of thing.
In the 30s, it was stopped.
Because, again, there was a bit of a fight in Googan, and it got to the bishop's ears anyway, and he stopped the mass. So the next year, it was a procession from the main road to the church, and that went on for a few years. And then it was all changed back again to have the mass at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
The mass used to be at 10 o'clock in the morning, so the rest of the day was for all other events. In the afternoon part, there was reference to faction fighting here in Googan. In the 20s, the high mass was stopped at 10 o'clock in the morning. So when it was introduced in a number of years later, it was reintroduced at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the bars at that stage were not allowed to open. Over time, again, that changed. Pilgrimage was reinstated.
Maria, your memory of Googan Sunday?
Younger years, you'd spend down at the standings buying the toys and playing the games and different things. But in later times, you'd get to see the bishop leaving the hotel and the pipe band bringing him back and everything. But to watch the crowds, it was amazing to see the
crowds.
So
it was a very, very busy day for you.
Extremely busy day, yeah.
From early morning until late in the evening.
Yeah, it would start the day before.
My mother and my father and the preparations, you know, for a whole week before. Because when I was young, they had to bottle the stout. They bottled the Guinness, and the barrels would come in into the main kitchen, and the corking machine would be set up, and all the bottles would be washed, and be washing a lot of bottles preparing for the Sunday.
It all goes back to the pagan god Lu.
Lu was also coming in Finbar's time. Lu was that legendary monster that was in the lake, that pre-Christian versus Christian time. So Lu represented the pre-Christian, and Finbar represented the Christian. A story about the forming of the River Lee and Lu. Lu was the serpent in the lake, and the story goes that St. Finbar was out blessing his flock, and in his hand he had this holy water vessel called an Lunine. Now, in Shanachas and Talura, there's another reference as well to the Lunine being an actual friend of Finbar. But either way, Lu came up out of the lake and grabbed the holy water vessel from Finbar and crashed back into the lake. And of course, there was a huge almighty row in between them. And Finbar at the time banished Lu from the lake, and it crashed the rocks over here at the end. And it formed, some say it formed the River Lee all the way to Cork, so the line of the serpent is going down. But about a mile downstream, there is a waterfall, and it's a sluice type waterfall, which stops all other fish coming up. There's only trout in this lake. And in that waterfall, Lu got stuck and released this holy water vessel called an Lunine. Now, the waterfall is known as Asa on Lunine. Lu was sleeping in the lake between Ballingeary and Shigeela. Lucky Lu, it is now known. And there is reference to Lu as well being Tashane Lee. That is the River Lee name comes from. When you go down further to Inniscarra, he was lying in the river. The Scarra is the hunting of Lu out of the rivers. It carries the full length of the River Lee, the stories of Lu.
In the late 1600s, at the height of the penal laws, Capuchin Father Denis O'Mahony came to Googan to live a life of asceticism and constructed what he believed St. Finbar's hermitage looked like. Is there any record of what kind of man O'Mahony was?
There's no records of him. He was a very quiet, wanted to come here as a hermit. He had left somewhere in the Bandon area and he moved here to Cugan. What he was really interested in was re-establishing this point of pilgrimage that was here. So he rebuilt the church here alongside this, the cell structure that we're in, and he rebuilt the cells as well. There's a story in Shanachas and Talur as well that Cromwell's men came hunting for him here and that actually hid here on the island and none of them could find him.
Father O'Mahony spent 28 of years of his life here. And he lived on the island in a little house down here at the side.
It was said Father O'Mahony had a garden here.
In the older days, we used to see where the ridges were, where they planted their vegetables. Mm-hmm. But now it's all changed now. Yeah.
Does the island, Maria, mean something special to you?
Anytime, we'll say any occasion between our christenings, our marriages. Unfortunately, there's always funerals. Here where we're standing, they come and do holy rounds here. If we say if someone is sick, a group will gather and they'll say the rounds and do the prayers in the hope that that person will get better or that they'll have an easier time. Or it is a sacred space in our lives.
And is that continuing? I mean, do you find your children have the same sort of feeling for it?
They would, definitely, especially in the quieter times.
The prayer rounds are still continuing. You'll get a group of people here arriving kind of late in the evening, 9, 10 o'clock even at night, or even earlier, even in winter time, and they will do the prayer round. There's a huge pilgrimage is on the up again, which is quite amazing, where some of the established churches will struggle at times. But the amount of people that are coming to Cugan Barra from all walks of life, for all reasons in life, coming here as a point of pilgrimage is definitely on the up.
Yeah, I see in the notice outside the island here, there's lighting here all night.
All night,
so
yeah.
That you can come any time in the night.
And you'll get groups of people here coming here at 9, 10 o'clock at night doing the prayer round for someone that is sick, and they will be coming from within quite possibly an hour of here to come here and with that fate in St. Finbar.
Breda, was there some miracle associated with the island?
Well, I'm going with all the stories my grandmother told me, you know, because in the old days they made the round before 12 and after 12 on the eve of St. John and St. Finbar. They had a long round and a short round, but all the older people, like my grandmother, done the long round, which lasted 2 hours.
2 hours?
Yeah, they finished the last cell here with 45 Our Fathers and 45 Hail Marys. My grandmother used to tell me about a lady that came with her child. The child was blind. And they were praying at a well outside the side of the wall. I think that well is dry now. And it was a thorn tree over the well. And the child said to the mother to look at the tree. It's all lighting up. And the child was cured. Another story in my time, well, we had a priest in the parish one time, and he told us when he was a child from Bandon, his mother brought him because he was very ill. And they bathed him in the well. And they came to Cugan on a horse and trap, and he was cured.
Gosh.
And we knew him afterwards because he told the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you good?
Yeah, even recently, there's a lady that comes to the cafe. She comes 5 or 6 times a year with her son, who has special needs. Mm-hmm. And one day we were just sitting down chatting to her, and I said, "You're over here very often." And she said, "Yeah, I have great faith in St. Finbar. He helped my son. He had a particular ailment on top of the other ailments, and he helped my son and cured him of that." Mm. So she comes 3 or 4 times a year.
You were saying there a few minutes ago that, you know, it's a time where there are ceremonies or highlights, there are baptisms or confirmations or whatever that the island is associated. But is it a place that you would come if you personally...
Absolutely. You come back and light a candle and say your prayers, or sit in peace inside in the church if there was something troubling you, or even come up in here at night time. It's amazing just to be in peace in here.
Breda, particularly remembered here in the Oratory, your uncle, a native of nearby Ballingeary, the Cardinal Archbishop of Los Angeles, Timothy Manning.
He left Ballingeary at a very young age of 17 years. He went to Menlo Park in California, where he was ordained a priest. But he always came back to Ballingeary all the years. All his sermons in the States, when he was putting his story together, he always went back to Cugan Barra, left his mind drift back to Cugan Barra. He done our baptisms and marriages here.
He was very calm in his ways, very thoughtful in his ways. The influence that he had, we never realised that as teenagers, because he was the uncle coming home.
Being picked up from school
yeah.
by the person who couldn't drive on our side of the road as good. Or going for amazing day outs, actually. That was with my grandmother in the middle of the summer, which was unusual. But because I was the youngest and everyone else was busy, I got to go. He just valued us all as coming home to his family. He came home for Christmas in 1988, I think. And that was his first Christmas home since he was a teenager, I suppose.
Gosh.
And we just had a beautiful Christmas. It was, he loved it. My father took him out on Christmas Eve and all to see all the, before, like, there wouldn't have been electric candles in the window. It was proper candles at that stage before all this came along. And Dad took him all over the Ballingarry and the back roads to see all the candles in the windows. He absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that was his highlight that Christmas, was seeing, just being at home.
Yeah, amazing after so many years. Yeah. We're going to go from here down to the shore of the lake. We'll talk to you from there.
Green Island in Lone Gugan Barra, where a lure of song rushes forth as you know.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Lone Gugan Barra, where a lure of song.
I'm Frank Lewis. Six generations of the Lucys, the Cronins, can trace their direct ancestry here in Gugan Barra and Ballingarry. It was 1760, the focal point in this horseshoe-shaped valley, the basin gouged out by glacial action over hundreds of thousands of years. The water left behind from the Ice Age. The lake is the scenic centre of Gugan Barra. Today's programme is recorded on November the 18th. And you can send us your comments for later use. Everything in Gugan, as I said, revolves around the lake, a place of endless childhood fun, a place of teenage adventures, a place to court and be courted, a place to fish. Breda, what's the memory, the story that sums up the lake for you?
Well, I suppose boating when I was young, you know, you go out in the boat and go. I used to fish a lot.
Were you a good fisherman?
I used to fish a lot in those days. And
What was the record catch?
The record catch for a friend of mine was 5 pounds 4 ounces, but that was just
that was a once-off.
Yeah,
but it was a cannibal then, I take it.
It was a cannibal. Yeah. The man even jumped out of the boat to be sure he wouldn't lose the catch.
Yeah. What was your record?
Oh, my record wasn't great. You know,
no.
I used to fish with my father a lot. The two of us would go off. Maybe we'd go to Killarney fishing. Stayed overnight in Killarney and fish all day long. Go to Clonee and Muggs Lake. We went to a lot of places. Where? My father used to fish a lot in the early night. I often saw him with the midges out and he rubbing something or other to his arms to, you know, to fish.
Yeah.
It was a good time to fish when the midges were out in the evening.
Legend and science have very often complemented one another in landscape.
Because it's a place of pilgrimage, you have a lot of those, we'll say, traverses over the mountain as such for all those pilgrimage dates. So you have the walkways coming in from Grossmount, from coming in from the Kilgarvan, Barnastoke, coming in from Barland, coming in from Caelfield, coming in from Inchigillas. We're best associated with the valley being upland people, so all our neighbours are on either side of the mountain as well. It's not just the old areas living next door, but it's everybody on either side. Our Scott, Caleb, Varnadine, you can't live without them.
Breda, have you any memory of that connection with people from over the mountain?
A lot of people coming into Gugan from the Barland Valley, because my granduncle went from Gugan to Barland and he married in Barland. So a lot of his descendants were in Barland. And they came over the mountain. Some of them came to work here. They came to plant the trees in the forest. And the funerals in the famine time came over the mountain. The funeral path over the mountain to Gugan.
But did they lift the coffin the whole way then? Or?
The whole way across, yeah. A group of men would shoulder the coffin to Gugan.
In the 70s, when there was people from the other valleys, we'd say from Barland particularly working here, sometimes it used to be faster for them to walk over the top of the mountain into Barland than wait for a car to bring them all the way around.
How long would it take to walk it?
If you pick the right path from the top of the valley here, you'd be down on the Barland Road in about 40 minutes or less, with a bit of pace.
On the day that you brought us across the mountain from Caelkill to here, I mean, we were walking in cloud the whole time.
We were walking cloud all that day, yeah. But that's a different trek. Then that can be up to 5 hours coming in on the other side. But right. that's part of that pilgrimage route, the St. Finbarr's route coming in from Caelkill, or the Bear Away coming in. So that's a longer haul. That's an 18-kilometre haul. But the valleys are so close together that you can actually go from one to the other quite quickly.
Maria, what do you associate with the lake?
It's always changing. You wake up in the morning, you go up this morning, it's raining, it's calm, it's very still. You could wake up tomorrow morning and we have our own little ecosystem up here and the wind could be blowing every which direction. Mm. The lake is always different looking. No matter what day you wake up, the lake will look different every day.
Gugan, Finbarr's Hermitage, where the River Lee rises.
The association between here and the city of Cork, there's a huge respect for the River Lee, the way it flows onwards down river into Cork. There's a great pride in it as well. The original story is that Finbar, according to Shanachas and Talura, the legend was that Finbar was only here for 3 years, but in a dream it was said to him that this was not going to be the point of his resurrection. So then he went on downstream, according to legend, following the path of Lou that had created this river on down to Cork, and he built his next school really on the banks of the River Lee, mm-hmm. in Cork. There was also in that Shanachas and Talura as well, there was a lovely story that was referenced to this guy called Corcodine. And Corcodine was, Cork was divided in two parts, there was two families involved. Corcodine had the eastern side of the city. There were two warring factions within the city. When Finbar went, Finbar sided with Corcodine, and it's from that the name of Cork evolved from being Corcodine.
Fish from the lake to serve to visitors in the hotel. Was there ever any commercial fishing on the lake? I mean, there's stories of fish caught by the visitors themselves.
In my younger days, we had a lot of fishermen staying in the hotel. The trout were often on the menu because my father and my uncle, they were very good fishermen. And in those days, they went out and caught some fish for dinner.
A lot of visitors would have caught their own trout and brought them in for you to cook them for them.
Oh, yes, that happened an awful lot, yeah. When the visitors brought the trout in to be cooked for breakfast.
Yeah. And does that ever happen anymore?
We don't have a lot of fishermen now anymore because a lot of the young people are not interested in fishing. But we have a fishing club here which is very successful, really. It takes great care of the lake. And all along the bank, you know, you don't have people lighting fires and fishing and...
Times have changed, O'Neill, haven't they? I mean, people now, you know, it's now catch and return. A lot of the fish are not taken and brought and cooked or whatever, you know.
There's a lovely habit of that here in the lake in Gugan. Gugan is a very, very natural lake. The water, it is a mountain, it's an acid mountain lake. So the fishermen say that there's two varieties of trout here. One is paler, one is darker, mm-hmm. according to flesh inside. But a lot of them will do the catch and release and leave the small ones back in. Mm. You have a lake of very variable depth, so along the shoreline you're going to get a lot of small fish. But there's some very, very deep channels in the lake as well, and that is where we believe the big fish are. The cannibal fish are gone down bottom feeding.
Maria, as you were saying a while ago, I mean, some of the photographs on the website for the hotel, the incredible clarity and stillness of early morning, the wisps of cloud or fog rising off the water, ranging from that to the place being completely socked up by rain and cloud. Is there a particular weather experience that you remember here?
Being snowed in when we were younger.
For long?
The last big time, I think, was in 1986, I would say. Or no, the big freeze, I suppose, of 2009 and 2010. And the lake completely froze over.
Could you go out in it?
They actually did. One of the mornings, I came over one morning and there was a Dutchman. And he had a, as you know, like they'd have in the canals in Amsterdam or whatever, and he was drilling. Uh-oh. And I was watching him and he said, oh yeah, 6 inches. And that was at the edge. So that day they went ice skating around the edges, and then as
you
the days
didn't join
went on
them.
Oh gosh, no. As the days went on, there was more and more people, but it was very eerie because the it was expanding and contracting as the day would go on, and the cracks and the noise were they were just, it was very eerie. But you would be afraid, but there was people out. That was the biggest event I think that we had. Another one was when that storm of February 2015, and the wind was spectacular. It knocked so many trees around the farm. It knocked. It was amazing. It just blew through.
The power. Have you a weather memory, Breda?
The ice I remember very well because it was very dangerous, and it was surprising to see so many people going out on the lake. You know, I even saw a lady pushing a child out on a buggy on the lake. We saw a guy going out on a bicycle. We saw them play a ball on the lake. We were so nervous of it. Our cow got stranded in the lake and we couldn't get her in, and they had a big problem to get her in. They had to throw ropes on her, to try and get her to walk in on the ice,
Gosh. Short story writer Sean O'Fuilan and his family holidayed in Gugan for a number of years, holidays that are fondly remembered by his daughter Julia in her memory trespassers.
it's the silence of the valley is the one that, that stands out in my mind always. That's Seán Ó Fualán's work, and even though he references a cobbler as the person that has actually died in the book, it is actually the tailor Buckley is who he's referencing. And all of that story was based on a whole series of people that were here in Cronin's here behind us, and that, that is the silence of the valley. It's a wonderful piece of work. It was dramatised by the New Theatre Company in 2006 here in Cronin's as well, for us, because they wanted to bring in, they wanted to return, the New Theatre Company, when they performed Taylor Lanster here, they wanted to return something to us, so they performed the Silence of the Valley, and they brought in all the locals in as extras, as Seán Ó Fualán had them in all these characters that were here at the time of the death of the tailor, or the cobbler as he references.
All of that tradition, Maria, of Fualán and Gibbings and Frank O'Connor and the Taylor and Anstey, of course, and Eric Cross, and so many people coming here and visiting, and
so many people coming now asking about it. Like, obviously people have had time and they've read them, and they ask about where the Taylor and Anstey are buried and all the stories that were attached to them, and to see what did really happen.
Okay, we're going to go on. We're going to go up to the edge of the forest park, and we'll talk
a
to you from there.
Island England. In Long Gugan Barra, where a lu of song rushes forth as a...
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Seán Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Long Gugan Barra, where a lu of
six generations of the Cronin Lucy family can trace direct ancestry here in the Gugan Barra, Ballingeary area. In the late 1930s, Creature, the state forestry company, planted some 64,000 conifer trees, filling over 137 hectares, 339 acres, covering the entire western or blind valley end of the Gugan Coombe. In 1966, they opened the first forest park in Ireland here. Long before Creature bought this land,
the Holland family lived here, and there were two houses down here at the back. One was known as the Palace. That was the very old house of the Hollands. They had dairymen on the farm. They owned a lot of land here. My granduncle had a bit of land for a while here, but they worked on the cattle and sheep.
And the land in here, I mean, looking at the land now, even from the entrance to the forest up, there didn't appear to be a lot of land that would be very suitable for...
It was very good land.
Was it?
Yes, there were a lot of fields down here all along the way to the gate.
Any particular memory of either of the families here? Any particular stories associated with them?
I don't remember a lot about the Hollands, but... The O'Sullivans married into Holland because I think there were only women left in Coombe Rua, and Jeremiah O'Sullivan, Sullivan McGrath, married one of the Hollands and came to live in here. And most of his family went to school in near Kilkill. There was only one went to school in Camanachd. That was Larry, and he went to school on horseback from here. They left Coombe Rua in 1947.
When they were going to school, would they have gone over the mountain or would they have gone by road?
Oh, no, down the road to
down
the
road
in Camanachd, yeah.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I should have said, we're in the forest park. We're up at the high point. We had intended to have our first point down at the entrance of the forest, but there's some forest work going on there, a lot of machinery, so we got away from it. We're up at the top end. We're looking down on the embryonic River Lee rising below us and flowing through the woodlands here. The IRA used to train here. Tom Barry tells of his great escape here.
Tom Barry and his flying column, who were active for a number of years, were the thorn in the side of the British Empire. The British Empire could not get the better of them. But this famous General Percival, who surrendered Singapore to the Japanese, he was in charge here in the south at the time, and he put together a ring of steel. And they said that there was up to 30,000 troops involved. The ring of steel came in from the Kerry side, came in from North Cork, came in from West Cork and from South Cork as well. And they were closing in on Tom Barry. Tom Barry was located with his men down in Cumhole near Bantry Bay. As the ring of steel was closing in that evening, they moved him up into the Borland Valley, and they gathered every rope and rifle they could muster. And in the cover of darkness, the Cronins of the other side from Ballylickey and Borland brought them over through this very dangerous passage into Gugan, and we know it as Barry's Way. It's down through the through Powell, which is a natural chimney coming into the valley from this side, in from the Borland Valley. And I think they got the fright of their lives the following day when they actually saw
it. Because this was in the dark, of course.
It was in the dark of night, which you can do in the dark of night. It is a treacherous place, but you really, really have to know your path. And they escaped Percival. Percival closed in on Bantry Bay, and there was no Tom Barry to be found.
Tom Barry's men all being
roped together because it's very boggy on top. There's a small little lake there called the Lake of Powell as well. It's a very deep lake, so it's a boggy landscape on top. And the path coming in is really, really, really narrow. Mm. And it's a bit of, even for us going out into the Borland Valley, it's a scramble. It's a very, very dangerous place. We don't normally go there in daytime.
Are you suggesting you'd go there by night as well?
I would do it. I would challenge. I'd be mad enough for that. Members of the Holland family keep coming back to Googan, descendants of those that actually lived here in the valley. And I remember a couple of years ago when we were talking about Tom Barry, one of the descendants saying that she always remember her grandmother talking about the noise of the hobnail boots the night that Tom Barry's flying column came down the valley, because they marched them over then to Cronin's Hotel, and they billeted 103 of them in the hotel that night. But what amazes me that in 1920 that they could muster enough blankets and food to feed 103 people, because feeding 103 people is not an easy feat.
Creatures in 64, they opened the Googan Forest Park, which with its dramatic views over the surrounding mountains, the lake and the woods, the earliest stages of the River Lees, I've said, that became the mighty river in Cork City, 89 kilometres away. 6 forest walks, picnic tables, a place to come no matter what the weather or time of year is like. The felling in 2014 of 16,000 Japanese larch trees because of the infectious Phytophthora ramorum, closing the park for 6 months. There's been extensive replanting with Scots pine, ash, oak, birch, alder, sally, all the natural vegetation. Probably our finest short story writer, Frank O'Connor, stayed at Cronin's Hotel. Breda, your mother, Joan Manning of Ballingeary, sister of Cardinal Manning of Los Angeles, was running Cronin's. On one occasion, she threatened to throw O'Connor out.
That was my grandmother Cronin.
Oh, your grandmother?
My grandmother Cronin. Yeah. She threatened to throw him out because on an Easter Sunday morning he wouldn't go to Mass.
Oh. Does Googan Barra feature in any of O'Connor's short stories? Retired teacher, local historian, and...
I can recollect reading in Natligan in Irish by Frank O'Connor about Googan in Core, an Irish language magazine, mm-hmm. in which he described being here at Christmas time. And the beauty and the amazement of all the candles in the windows of the houses on Russell Lough on the far side of the lake all being reflected mm-hmm. in the lake water. And then he spoke about calling to see Anstey mm-hmm. and the tailor and a night of singing and telling inside. And at the end of the night, the tailor, I think it was the tailor, threw his arms around Frank and he said to Frank, Bergersley, dear Frank, to be ehe vera halakaling. We had a very dirty night.
Neil, in what has been and still is among the strangest 2 years most of us have ever experienced, probably the strangest since World War II, Neil, is there an experience that sums up the 2020 and 2021 tourist season for you?
The tourist season, there was a huge change to home holidays, which was the big difference. I mean, it was amazing when we came into 2021 when our borders opened up again to hear English accents and French accents. But 2020 was the one that was unique because it was all Irish holidaymakers that were in the valley. And even in the early days, you know, when you had, we say, Americans living in Ireland and the accent was heard in the restaurant, there was people, their heads were turning when they were hearing an accent that wasn't local or national and such. So, it's the fact of that we can actually turn on our own tourism and our own tourism can support us, which is fairly amazing.
To take us to the news at 10 o'clock, we'll be back in Googan Barra after news and sport. J.J. Callanan's poem from the start of the 19th century evokes Googan Barra for many. Dunica Olusa.
There is a green island in lone Googan Barra where a lure of song rushes forth as a narrow. In deep valleyed Desmond, 1,000 wild fountains come down to that lake from their home in the mountains. There grows the wild ash, and the time-stricken willow looks chidingly down on the mirth of thy billow as, like some gay child, the sun monitor scorning, it lightly laughs back to the laugh of the morning. And a zone of dark hills, oh, to see them all brightening where the thunder flings out its red banner of lightning and the waters rush down with the thunder's deep rattle like clans from their hills at the voice of the battle. and widely from Boyleuch the eagle is screaming, and brightly on Clairdoch the sunshine is beaming. Oh, where is the place in this valley or climate so meet for a bird as this lone little island? How oft, when the summer sun rested on Clara and it lit the dark heath on the hills of Ivara, have I sought thee, sweet spot, from my home by the ocean, and trod all thy wiles with a minstrel's devotion, and thought of thy bards when assembled together in the cleft of thy rocks or the depth of thy heather, and gleaned each grey legend that darkly was creeping, or the mist and the rain where its beauty were sleeping. These bard of the hills, were it mine to inherit the wing of thy harp and the fire of thy spirit, with the wrongs which like thee to my country have bound me, the azure mantle of song fling its radiance round me. Still in those wiles might young liberty rally and send her strong shout over mountain and valley. The star of the west might yet rise in its glory, and the land that was darkest be brightest in story. I too shall be gone, but my name shall be spoken when Erin awakes and her fetters are broken. Some minstrel shall come in the summer eve's gleaming, when freedom's young light on his spirit is beaming, and bend o'er my grave with a tear of emotion, where calm Owen Bee seeks the kisses of ocean, or plant a wild wreath from the banks of that river, or the heart and harp that are sleeping forever.
That was amazing, and all of that is without a note of any kind, and he wasn't aware of it, but around his feet as he was reciting that there was a little robin, and it was like as if he was listening to the poem as well.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
It is a green island in Lowen Googan Barra.
I'm Frank Lewis. Back to the 1760s, six generations of the Lucy Cronin families can trace to direct ancestry here in Googan Barra and Ballingeary. Programme recorded on November the 18th. Comments for later use, write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Text 083 300 3300, phone 066 712 3666, or you can email storiedkerry@gmail.com. I'm joined from the sixth generation by Breda Lucy, and from the seventh generation by her daughter Maria Ilera and by Neil Lucy. As well, we will later be joined by retired teachers Sean O'Sullivan and Donachal Lusa. Now we're across the road from the Hermitage on the Forest Park side of the hotel. We're in the graveyard. Here you can read all of the headstones in a short time. We're standing by the grave of the tailor Tim Buckley and his wife Anstey, carved on the headstone by his friend Seamus Murphy. A star danced under that I was born. Yeah. Neil, in his book on the tailor and Anstey, journalist Eric Cross records, in your words, entertaining anecdotes, the facts of rural life, as understood by the tailor in Anstey, were accurate and valuable. The book was banned by the Irish Censorship Board for being, in its general tendency, indecent. It was a story, as we were saying earlier, that not only the book itself, but the whole story around the book became almost more famous than the book itself.
I often felt that the whole book was totally, utterly misunderstood. The Tailor Nancy is a collection of stories from the late 30s into the early 40s, and it is life as you would see it in Guernapeca or in Ballingarry or in Gugan. It is the stories through the tailor's eyes, and a lot of these stories are very worldly. But there was a couple of anti-God references and a couple of translations that were very badly misunderstood in the urban society or in Dublin society at the time. And for that then, the book was punished, which was not necessary, in my mind.
In his introduction to the second edition, 1948, the post-censorship, Frank O'Connor describes the effect of the banning of the Tailor in Anstey. Neil, though all of this happened before you were born, the way Frank O'Connor and Sean O'Whelan used this makes you very angry.
Not exactly very angry, but it's a time and place itself way back then. Frank O'Connor was totally, utterly anti-censorship, and so was Sean O'Whelan at the time. They were having fierce difficulties with the censorship board. 280 books a year were being banned for a lot of ridiculous reasons. They had their point in place, but they used the Tailor and Anstey book as an example of how heavy-handed the censorship board was. In that edition, Frank O'Connor is there, and he's referencing that they were barricaded into their house and that the people had done different things to them, but that wasn't true. What they were trying to get across was how a very simple couple living in rural Ireland had fallen foul of the censorship board. But I felt that maybe that Frank O'Connor was a little bit heavy-handed in that, whereas in the locality it wasn't like that.
The church saw this being reported in the papers, that, and the bishop might have said to the local parish priest, "What's happening out there?" And the local parish priest came with his two curates and forced the tailor to burn his copy of the Tailor in Anstey in his own fireplace. And to do this to an 80-year-old man was the height of blackguarding and bullying. Yeah. And then Frank O'Connor coming along in 1963 and making up the story about being barricaded in, when somebody actually came along after playing cards with the tailor's son in Gugan, and one of the local fellas, when they were going home, stuck a kippin in the door of the latch, not the old style latch. That was as much as the barricading that was done. And it was just two lads going home who had been playing cards in Gugan that night with the tailor's son. Yeah. And this was a bit of messing to do with the visitors, that, and the tailor's son, all he had to do was climb out the window and take the kippin out of the latch. Yeah.
The tailor's death is the subject of one of Sean O'Whelan's most tender stories, The Silence in the Valley.
He wrote a story about a cobbler that was after passing away, and that all the characters were in the local establishment making up this story about the cobbler dying and going to the funeral. And the very, very end of it there is those special lines, and they were lines that referenced to Anstey, the tailor's wife. But it was all set in Cronin's hotel, and all the characters were staying there.
One clear star above the mountain wall gleamed. Seeing it, her eyebrows floated upward softly for sheer joy. "Yes," she said quietly, "it will be another grand day tomorrow." And her eyebrows sank very slowly, like a falling curtain.
I'm not old enough to remember the tailor. All he could go on is anecdotes and what people say about him. I heard many people saying he was all right to make a pence, but for God's sake, don't ask him to make a quarter or two for you.
Anstey would come to our house when I was young for a bottle of stout, sit near the range and put a poker into the red fire and put it into the glass of the stout. Yeah. She had mulled porter.
There is a story, the man who's marked here by the hole in the old headstone.
Yeah, if you walk into the graveyard, when you come into the graveyard, there are two gates, and if you walk into the one furthest from the hotel, immediately on the left-hand side, when you walk up the path, the largest stone that you meet is a gravestone, and it belongs to Matty Long. He was a beggar man, a bacock, who was used to have his circuit of farms to come and work on during his life, and one of the farms was Michael Moynihan's farm in Guernapeca. They were neighbours of the tailors, and Matty Long, anyway, in 1914 fell off a ditch someplace and injured himself very badly, and the parish priest asked the Moynihans to mind him, and they minded him in his final few days, and a baby was born. And Breed was telling me that when the baby was born, Matty Long was so thankful for the care he was getting that he said that nobody will die here for another 20 years. And anyway, Matty Long died, and they had no money to bury him, so they brought him up to Ugon and they buried him inside the gate, and they got a flagstone and drove a hole in it with a crowbar and said that everybody will know now where Matty Long is buried, because it's the only gravestone with a crowbar hole in the middle of it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Matty Long is buried there. And then the Moynihans, 20 years later, the woman who had minded him died, and when she died, her husband said, God, why didn't he say 10 years more?
I can't leave this graveyard without visiting the grave of a man who was the essence of Gugan Barra, his sense of fun, getting one up on a Kerryman who misdiagnosed the sex of his sheep. More than made up for Kerry beating Cork, his knowledge of sheep, of the mountains and lakes and stories. Christy, Lucy, Breeda, your husband.
Christy loved living in Gugan. He worked from morning till night to keep the place in order, and he knew a lot of the visitors coming to Gugan. So goes the story of the sheep.
Yeah. Yes. How do you sum him up, Neil? How do you sum up your father, Christy?
He understood the essence of Gugan. He understood the fact the place it was and the visitors here. He was a man that enjoyed meeting people and having the chat and finding out more about them. But he also had time to we'll say, between the hotel and the farm and rearing us, he had time for all that as well.
Was it you said, Breeda, he was blessed with a gentle sense of humour? Christy told that when he was born on Christmas Day 1930, his grandmother passed away. He joked she had died with the fright of seeing him. Donica, here hidden behind a discreet screen of vegetation across the road from Finbar's Hermitage, looking down on the lake, up to the forest park and over to the mountains, a secluded place, and yet at the heart of the community. Donica, it fits in with the old people's view that dying is the most natural thing in the world, passing from this world to the next, but still very close.
Well, sure, of course. Every living thing dies, and even every living thing goes to sleep. All the trees, the flowers, everything goes to sleep for the winter. So we stand here near the tailor's grave, Sean O'Creedine, Berengary native, who did wonders for the Irish College here in Berengary and for the area around, and all the people that they succeeded in bringing their students to Berengary and lodge in local houses, learning Gaeilge from the early part of the century on. Another man buried here was Donald Scannell, who was born in the village near my own house below, and who was a constant visitor to Gugan in later years, but whose main claim to fame was he was president of the INTO for a good number of years, and he was responsible for giving me my first job with the Christian Brothers in Nina in County Tipperary.
Neil?
Yeah, Jerry Coakley was another one, the friends of the tailor as well. He lived a mile and a half down the road. A Bahan as such is what he lived in, and all he had as a window was the end of a bottle. He used to offer a round here in Gugan for sixpence. That was one of his ways of earning money.
So you paid
money.
Him sixpence and he did the round?
He'd do the round, but he'd a row seemingly with a groom down at Gugan Cross. The groom was getting very agitated, and of course Jerry was well able for him anyway, and the groom eventually gave in, and the last thing he said to Jerry, he was so annoyed at him, he said, I'll break every window in your house. Left him off with that. Sean, you went out.
No, I was just going to say, like, he wasn't being paid sixpence to go in and go drinking in the hotel. He was around doing prayers around the island. But the Jerry Coakley in the book The Tale of Nancy, actually the saint, the character, the saint, is based on Jerry Coakley.
There's a little stream down here under the graveyard, kind of a hollow in it, which is a part of the round to Gugan Barra, and it's called an Slanan, which is for improving your health, I suppose, Slanta. No question, maybe a holy well, but there was some gentlemen praying there some fine summer evening, and their cups there for drinking the water from, but he was looking, when he was finished praying, he was looking, would he drink the water, and there were loads of flies dancing on top of the water, and they had me a Kelly in the midsummer.
And
there was one of the people that Breed was talking about earlier from Cum Rue, Noisy Castillon,
Van
the Hans, anywhere. He was passing by, and pilgrims said to him, when he saw the bees and the water and things, sir, he said, tell me, can you drink this water? Hawkelman scratched his head, and he said, do you know, he said, no, I'm around here with an awful long time, but I never saw anyone eating it yet.
Steve said, the world is only a blue bag, and take a squeeze out of it when
a
you
green
can.
Green island in Lone Gugan Barra, where a lure of song rushes forth. As a...
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Lone Gugan Barra, where
six generations of Lucy's can trace direct ancestry here to Gugan Barra and Ballingeary to the 1760s. Now we're back on Holy Island on the lake shore in front of the ruins of the old church. Donica, why did Finbar, abandoned man, come to Gugan Barra?
Did he come to Gugan Barra at all? My neighbours here won't like to hear me say that. The Learys, when they came to Evelary, which is from Toothbridge near Macroom, up here to the very top of the mountains here behind us, they brought with them devotion to St. Finbar. They came from the south, the Learys, from Evelary Rish, round about Raskarby, that side down. There was devotion, and still is today, in the southern side, to St. Finbar. So on Google Sunday, Piley people probably still come, but used to come anywhere from the southern side, and then went that side over here to Gugan Barra to honour the saint. Also then I think that Gugan was always considered to be a spiritual or a holy place way back in Celtic times. If you look at the dates associated with St. Finbar, say the feast day on the last Sunday in September, which is not too far from the autumn equinox, and the other feast associated with him, when the sun is at its highest point in the sky, in the middle of June, which is around St. John's Eve. I think there was always devotion to the sun in particular, and the God in the sun, so to speak, maybe, in whatever gods the Celts had in Gugan. They're playing St. Finbar, their own saint, into that devotion, and they made a place of pilgrimage on it. Yeah. But if you read the lives of the Irish saints and the Gaelic version, the amount of people that St. Finbar was supposed to have in his monastery here, 750 deacons, 750 people just drive out devils, 750 doorkeepers. You would want a place from this other parish of Evelary to incorporate and to house, not in this little island. So if he was here, he was probably on the mainland.
People had great faith in the cures at Gugan. If they had a cow that was sick, they'd milk the cow into a basin and float that basin in the lake and dip the cow in the water to cure the cattle.
And people used to come and if they had sores and things like that, like they'd get water from the well. Yeah. I mean, it was a kind of a financial operation as well, because there was a person in charge of the well, and you'd get the well. It was a little hut that was built around the lake water.
Indeed.
And if when you come in the gate there on the right, and people used to have to contribute to get the water from the lake.
I always heard that there was a special cure in the waters of the lake for what was called red water. I didn't understand red water, but a local farmer told me that was also called the mutton, or blood in the urine. And they would drive the cattle through the, or the cows, the cattle through the lake, or the sick cow through the lake for a cure. I also recollect farmers telling me here that on the May Day, they used to drive cattle to the city, north of Baradov, there near Ramor, for a cure as well. And if I'm not mistaken, the city is also was also a base of pagan worship in pre-Christian times. And the serpent lived where we were earlier today, back in the Cum Rue, in the valley, where it is said that the sun never shines, only one day in the year. And certainly today wasn't the day. It isn't the day either.
No, in spite of the forecast and all the promises.
So the serpent wound his way down here along the infant River Lee, and he was sporting himself here in the lake for many a summer evening, until something tempted him on some fine morning to look in the door of the church where Finbar was saying his morning mass. Yeah. And as the old saying says about the goat, Nora Hill and Gore, Green Temple, Nistad and Shega Alhor, when the serpent Lewis stuck his head in the door, he didn't stop either. And he went up to the altar and whipped the chalice and away with him down, down the river. Finbar sent one of his saints to the top of a mountain rock over here to look down and see where was the serpent or what was he doing. And the saint who showed back to him, Tash in the Lee, he's lying down. It was said that he was lying where Lokalua or Lokali are, which is on the lakes, which if you had your throne today looking down from above, mm-hmm. you could see that they are in the shape of a resting snake. Mm-hmm. It is said that's how the river Lee and the lake are his name. The serpent devastated all chance countryside, all the dairy farmers that were down the road on each side of the lake. he impoverished them all. And so they hired Finbar again to come and banish him. After a tussle of 7 days and seven nights, Finbar succeeded in driving him out of the lake still here, and he headed off towards Cork. I have seen flags purporting to be emblems of Cork City, which show a serpent and a cross in his mouth. And he, leaving the city, he deposited the cross on what is known now as the South Island, and he went off out to sea. On the other hand, there is a Lee is an old Irish word for water. For example, back your countryside, you have Drogheda Lough, Lough Bridge, right. which is where the waters come to meet, and Keeldar Lough, the church of the two waters.
Neil, one of the previous times here when Dunica featured, we walked over from above Kilgavin over here into Cugan. There are these huge associations, aren't there? I mean, there are associations with Kerry, associations with Cork, associations with... I mean, you already talked about the walk from Kilkill to here. So it's beginning to be a crossroads, or it was always a crossroads, I suppose, of associations and connections.
It's a point of pilgrimage. So, I mean, they always came here, but it is using those old paths and in and out of here as such. Way back in time, too, it was there were celebrations, there were gatherings of people, especially in the 1800s till Dr. Murphy came along, or Bishop Murphy came along and banned all these good festivals. It was mid-1800s that the roads were developed, so there was no road in here. So it was all the pathways in over the tops of the mountain that people were using, like the old pilgrim paths. They're still there.
Breda, that association with over the mountain, and
there were the people that were buried here. The Kerrys came over all the time. And my grandmother used to talk about the Kerry nights, when they came over at the end of August, they had celebrations. They'd spend the whole night singing and dancing, and they wouldn't go home until morning to be able to get over the mountain.
It's
in the morning.
Bad.
The Barlan people were always coming and going here, and coming on pilgrimage and coming to work and
getting married.
To get married, that's true,
Yeah, like the tailor came from Kilgarvan, this side of Kilgarvan, up even closer to here than Morley's Bridge. He used to be coming here, making people's trousers and
fries
trousers. But when he married, when you come down from the mountain, from the Kilgarvan side, from Grossmount, one of the first houses you meet was the house that Anstey was living in. And then she was one of the McCarthys, and they were one of the Leas. There's the Denny Den Leas still west of the pass. But then in the early part of the last century, when they married, the Anstey's people had got a council house down on the road, and the tailor moved in there with them then. But like that, the connection between the Kerry people coming to Ugon has been always very close. Like, sometimes it wasn't very friendly, but they'd have faction fights and things.
That around a certain kind of Saturday or Sunday in July?
No, they used to, that's only important for Kerry people. We used to keep it up all year. When they used to come over in September for St. Finbar for Ugon Sunday, and that, like for that festival at the time, there used to be faction fights and serious ones, and a person got killed one time. It in the 1800s, it was, but mostly it was for the annual celebrations that used to go on.
Indeed,
and I think
and prayers.
Anstey met the tailor at the fish in Ballyvuna. That's where she met the tailor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think so.
And we're going to go from here to the forest. We'll talk to you from up there in a few minutes.
In Lohan Gugan Barra, where a lure of song rushes forth as a
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Lowen Gugan Barra.
Wandering around Gugan Barra with members of the Lucy Cronin family who have direct ancestry to this area back to the 1760s. Recorded on November the 18th, in later programmes, we'll use your stories of Gugan Barra and are the Lucy Cronin family. Post Frank Lewis, Magerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. You can email storykerry@gmail.com, phone 066 712 3666, or text 083 300 3300. We're again in the splendid 137 hectare 339 acre 64,000 tree forest park. This time we're high up in the car park again. We're just at the base of Slie Sleva, the great route that goes up to the mountain, the circuit that takes about 2.5 hours and gives you wonderful views down over the lake and the forest and the mountains round about, and leads you on to the mountains that are in the background. Breda, in your growing up years in the 1940s and 50s, where did the visitors come from and what did they do while they were on holiday in Gugan Barra?
We got a lot of visitors fishing and shooting, and we were open all the year round. We got a lot of people to come and shoot in the winter time, then the fishing in the summer time. We got a lot of English visitors, and most of them would stay for a week or 2 weeks. Got a lot of Americans too. Some Americans stayed quite a while. We had two people who stayed 6 months every 2 years.
So it's a place of lots of memories. Neil, when did the Forest Park begin to be important?
It was opened in the 1960s. In the western side of Cork City, it was the first forest park. It was the first real amenity that had trails or walkways in it. And all of a sudden, it had picnic tables. It was a place to go on Sundays. So that Sunday outing to Gugan became so, so popular, especially from Cork City.
Historian, retired teacher, dairy farmer, and associated with the Ballingeary and Inchigilla Historical Societies. Seán O'Sullivan, poet Mara Mhaoine Léire, her most famous poem tells about Cadh Caomhnaíoch, the Battle of Caomhnaíoch.
That took place in 1822. It was following the Napoleonic Wars. There was an economic depression in Ireland and in the rest of Europe. And for a couple of years after that, the population was large. There was the Tide War was going on at the time, which was there was a lot of discontent over the fact that the majority Catholic population were paying a tax to the Church of Ireland, which represented a tiny minority of the population, and they were paying it to the local rector. So there was a lot of dissatisfaction about this, and there was groups of underemployed and unemployed people gathered in late 1821 and early 1822 as part of this ongoing unease in the country, which had been going on practically continuously from the 1640s when the dispossession started. But in at that time, there was a group camped out next to Dúchail Mountain, a short distance away here from Gugan, next to the Pass of Caomhnaíoch, and they raided houses in Bantry, took arms from Bantry House, and they escaped back over again to Ballingeary. And the next day, the landed gentry in Bantry, this was in January 1822, put together a militia force and members of a resident English regiment, the Essex Rifles. There was a series of skirmishes across the side of the mountain. There were a number of local people killed, and the English soldier, John Smith, and his body was hidden, ropes tied around it, and dropped into a pond. And eventually the English came back. A local informer had told the British where the body was. He was buried in Inchigilla, and his gravestone can still be seen in Inchigilla Protestant Churchyard.
I was just recollecting there when Sean was talking about Smith being buried in Tullyhaw Hall, and after about a fortnight or 3 weeks, a young lad ran into the house and he said to the people in the house, maybe his father or grandfather, that he did go over in the pond. The people in the house knew that it was the corpse that was after raising up, because the sugans at which he was tied down were after rotting in the water. After the battle, one of my wee sons was being tried in Cork for his part in the White Way movement and in the Battle of Caomhnaíoch, and they had got none other than Daniel O'Connell to defend him. And his fee at that time, 1822-3, believe it or not, was 100 guineas a day. Maribee was listening at the court case, and a break came for lunch or something, and he never came to her, and he invited her he asked her to go out for a drink. You see, that he'd take her out to have a drink in some pub nearby. And she said that she couldn't go because Tá Machri, that lad, Marek Nifi God, is ni yetting all entry it, but Tá Bain Muscart, in a leaf, a glass, is a hoosh, Ganslad, a flea. She was too upset by the case of what was going on to think of having a drink or a treat.
Cosh oven Glennon Kilmer in Evlere Shavimshe Maritainen fierce and ehe Conshir Colossov Ig Machnov Shalom Fenig Is Ig Dean of Muswinte Is he geist doch to guilte Vlebingo Nunion The cool hung ka ik tak the near is glor the knack ik tak the shins le fui mun ka the crayon sleeve.
Neil, Breda, is there a particular place you like to come and walk and think?
The bit of the valley.
Steadily.
The stream is running and it's so calming. It's like a little fairyland as you walk along by the stream.
Yeah. What about you, Neil? Have you a favourite?
Schlieder na Cushy, which is one of the Valley Floor ones, would be always my first choice. And then I would go on to Schlieder as well. Schlieder is lovely because you're going along the younger river as it goes up into the valley. So you've all those different motions of energy of the stream or of the river as you progress upwards. So that's really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, anybody walking it here and imagining the little stream that is behind us goes on to be the River Lee flowing through Cork City, 89 kilometres away.
So I'm going to do a challenge, I'd say, on Twitter, I'd say, in the next little while. And the challenge is for someone to put a leg on either side of the River Lee. That'll be a good challenge for him.
There's no problem. Do you want me to do it now?
You can do it here now, but you won't be able to do it downstream.
do you think, I mean, will the pandemic change things, where visitors come from, what they'll do?
There is a shift to the outdoors, definitely. There's a movement of people that they're going to... You can see that if you... For all through the last two decades, they were all going to shopping centres this time of the year. They were all in a madness of shopping. That's all changed. People, you see way more people now in the outdoors rather than in the shops of Cork. And I went in buying tiles that are leaving to Cork City at 6 o'clock in the evening. There was nobody there. There's a whole change after coming, and hopefully that they will stay outdoors. They will be way healthier because of it.
What about you, Breda? I mean, what kind of change do you think it will make? Will it bring us back to the kind of your memories of the early years?
I think it might do, because people were going crazy shopping. I think all that's going to change. People are more concerned now about walking and walking shoes and, you know, outdoor clothes, really.
I mean, ranging from the gentle, flat, sheltered walking on the island and in the lower paths of the Forest Park to the more demanding Slie Asa and Slie na Sléibhe, to the rigours of the surrounding mountain rim, to even more challenging treks to the coast of Kerry. It's possible to walk here in any weather and at any time of the year.
Especially the new paths they've worked on from Gugan to Caolkill. That is a very popular walk. And people will park in Caolkill and walk right across the mountain to Gugan and take about 5 hours.
And is that sufficiently marked for...
Oh, it is.
So
it is.
That people can easily follow it.
It is. It is very well marked. And that is the most popular walk at the moment.
5 hours. I mean, if I remember my day with you going across that, as I said earlier in the programme.
It is a marked route now, so it is graded by the Sports Council, and it's up to the level it needs to be. The Bear of Breffni Way is going under development anyway, and it's one of the national projects for the next 2-3 years, so there will be more money spent on it as well. But at this point, marking and path regeneration or we say maintenance of paths has all been done, so it's a much improved walk since we were there.
Is this the first developed part of that, or are there other parts already developed as well? Is the Caolkill to Gugan the first developed part of it?
Caolkill to Gugan is part of... The Bear Breffni Way is made up of 12 different community walks as such. So you have the Bear Way to the west of us. And when you come over the top of the mountain, you come into Slie Gael to Fúscree. Slie Gael to Fúscree is from Caolkill to Gugan. It is Gugan to Béalán Gaeilge, Béalán Gaeilge to Ballyvourney, Ballyvourney to Mill Street. That's that section. And then you meet the North Cork Way after that. Kilmacter, and then they do Halloway, and onwards northwards you go. So the whole, all the routes all along the way are going to be developed as part of a national project over the next couple of years. But they're all at a point of development at the moment that they're all walkable and usable, and they are being walked very, very frequently.
So this is the same sort of thing as happened along the coast of the Wild Atlantic Way, that you had a whole lot of routes that, in fact, well, like the Ring of Kerry, had or the Dingle Peninsula or whatever, had separate identities. So you're joining a whole lot of routes to make it into the Berwick or Breffni Way.
The Berwick or Breffni Way. And eventually, at the moment, it's finishing in Black Line. So the ambition will be to cross the border with agreement, and then it will join the Ulster Way, and that will finish O'Sullivan's ambition to go from south to north, which was the original plan.
I hope as many don't die on the passage as...
Good Lord. Or that we lose people and that they camp off up in Tipperary places.
Be warned. Our next stop, our last stop today, is back at the Googan Barra Hotel. We'll talk to you from there in a few
green
minutes.
Island in Lone Googan Barra, where a lull of song rushes forth.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
There is a green island in Lone Googan Barra.
Our last stop in our trek around Googan Barra with members of the Lucy Cronin family, long-time residents here, as I've told you again and again, here since the 1760s, where we were to be in the Googan Barra Hotel, but in fact we're back in Cronin's, in the old kitchen where we started off. Author and artist of Lovely Is the Lee and Sweet Cork of Thee, and many other illuminating introductions to the countryside. On these I ponder, where'er I wander, and thus grow fonder, sweet Cork of Thee. Robert Gibbings, who visited and wrote about Googan in the 1940s. Breda, you told us earlier about your imagining that Gibbings was Santa Claus, but are there other childhood memories of Gibbings?
I remember Gibbings being here on the lake. He brought his own boat. He used to use it on the Thames, so he brought it to Googan, and it was canvas covering, but he had planned to spend some time on the lake in his boat, but he only spent one night. He went up the top of the lake and it was so quiet. He had heard so much about fairies, he got afraid.
You remember a story about the divil.
Two families of Hollands living in Coomroo at the time, and the houses were back to back, and the old house was called the Palace. And they were all sitting around the fire one night. I'm sure they must have had a lot of drink in them, I don't know, but the divil came down the chimney. It was their imagination of the divil anyway, because he had horns and he was chained, and he went right out through the kitchen and out the door.
There was another story at the time as well, wasn't there? The priest that came up to the valley as well, and he was supposed to go into Cumrua. Oh, yeah. And he was on a horse or
on
something?
Horseback, yeah.
On horseback, and whoever was leading the horse, that the horse bolted. Etiquette, was it? That the horse bolted just after the church and wouldn't go into the valley.
On a sick call. And that time, somebody should accompany the priest on a sick call. So he was on horseback. Betty Kitt, who's mentioned very much in Lovely Is the Lee, as they were going, the horse bolted. Father, I think it was Holland, asked Betty Kitt, are there any fairies around here? And Betty Kitt misunderstood him. And he said, there are hundreds of them, Father. He thought it was goats he meant.
To come right up to date, over the past 2 years, as we've heard, all sorts of strange and wonderful things have happened. But we've been joined by Katie, Neil's wife, and the woman who looks after the kitchen in the Googan Barra Hotel. And over the past 2 years, she's made a whole new name for herself on another front.
When the lockdown started in March 2020, Jane and Ali, our two daughters, were at home, and Jane persuaded me to do cookery videos, which she filmed at home in our house. And we started with just by making brown bread, and it went mad. Jane put it on the internet, and she did it really professionally, like it was just, everyone was sure that, you know, someone had done it for us, kind of like a marketing guru, who's Jane. And we got, I don't know, almost 500,000 hits on the brown bread.
500,000?
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
So it was brilliant, because it was like just such a simple thing. And I mean, I love cooking, and it's very easy for me to demonstrate. And Jane was good at the phone, and the whole thing went mad. And
so were you putting up a new recipe every so often?
So we were doing kind of a recipe a week. So we did scones, and we did Just lots of very simple things.
Like, and are all these up on the internet
they
now?
Are, yeah, they
under
are.
What?
You can find them on YouTube under Googan Barra Hotel Recipes. So Ali, she's our younger daughter, suggested that we'd do an innie cookery book and that we would give the proceeds to the ISPCC Childline, because all the time on the radio we were hearing so many children are in trouble because of the lockdown and not every house is a happy house, and that we'd give all the proceeds of the e-book. So Neil and Jane set up with iDonate, and all the money went directly to Childline, and we raised 15,300. Somebody put us forward for a Gourmand Award because we got an email from Edouard Cointreau. So we thought it was spam, because that's my favourite liqueur, Cointreau. And I was like, he could not be writing to me. I haven't had a Cointreau for about 5 years. And then it came back again, and we were proposed for a Gourmand Award for the cookbook.
Eduardo Cuento runs an organisation called the International Cookbook Affair. It's called the Gourmand Awards. Every year they select cookbooks from all over the world. They categorise them. In 2020, five Irish cookbooks got this national award. What we have just received in Paris is this international award, because Katie has won best cookbook in her category.
Katie and Jane.
There's 13 cookbooks in the hotel category internationally. In that list is the Ritz in Paris. What is absolutely wonderful is that something that is so simple that started in our kitchen, it just keeps giving. I mean, it keeps giving for Childline. So we've got the book printed in book form, and we're selling it through the hotel website. But for every book that is sold, there's a euro still going to Childline. As of, we'd say, October, there was just under 16,000 euro.
Danica, fairy stories.
I heard enough of them. When I was young, at a certain time in the night, I'd be don't go to bed, and there was no electric light, of course, at the time, so it was very easy to see fairies everywhere too in the dark.
Yeah.
But I'd go out and go up two steps of the stairs, and I'd be looking up. I'd be afraid to go up any further into the dark.
Yeah.
And I'd put my phone to sleep in the stairs.
When you read Andreas O'Meara-Cons, you read The Tailor Nancy, and you read Gibbings' books as well, and any other bits and pieces, I mean, Sean O'Riordan, Tiernan Ogre, Cool and Tea, it is a Gaeltacht tradition, very much a Gaeltacht tradition here in Moscree, that just the storytelling is so, so strong, but the belief in that other world, in the fairies as well, it's still there, it still exists. It's very obvious.
So are you still afraid to spend the night on the lake?
I would spend the night on the lake, yes, but you have to respect that other world.
So when the chapel was built, and when the sanctuary lamp and the candlesticks, they all have the serpent on the legs, or the chains, because they were ordered specially for the chapel because of the dragon.
Maria, for you, what continues of all of this?
I think even where we're sitting on the settle, that we don't know how old that settle is. We don't know who was in this house before us. We don't know who was, like, the house is here with 200 years or more. We don't know. Like, so it could go back and back and back and back. And that's what's really special, is that it's still here. And hopefully it will be here after us. We're the gatekeepers. And hopefully it will be here after us.
I remember suggesting to your brother sometime that this particular room would make a wonderful storytelling theatre, wouldn't it?
Never thought of it that way. I always just think of it as the kitchen.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, where so much happened around the fire and everything, you know.
Well, it's the original Irish theatre, I suppose, the Agal of Bertha, the two
it's
people
great,
having a conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the background, that's
I
where
suppose,
it came from.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
Ernst used to work here with my grandmother. And my grandmother told me, you know, the cow was very special to them. The cow was very valuable. And the cow would be brought into the kitchen if she was sick. My grandmother told me that Ernst used to milk the cow in the corner of this room, because the cow was ill at the time and she was kept warm in here.
So much tradition and obligation, the necessity to keep it, to keep the memory, to treasure the past.
We're the lucky ones that live and work here in this valley.
The snake, his name was Liavui.
Liavui?
Liavui, yes, Lia grey and Wee yellow. The Cronin family, and more recently the Lucy family, they're synonymous with Googan, but I would like to pay a tribute to them for keeping Googan the way it has been down through the years, over the centuries.
Googan Barra, a special place at any time of the year and in any weather. Special thanks to my guides, the Lucy family, whose roots, as you've heard, go back to 261 years and have been looking after visitors here since 1870. Neil Lucy agreed with my suggestion. He gathered the information and made the contact. Special thanks to Neil, Breda, Katie, Maria Ilera, Sean O'Sullivan, Donica O'Losa. In case I left anybody out in all of the others who talked and walked with me in this special place. At my right hand today and always since we married here in Gugan in 1975, programme coordinator and location sound was handled by Siobhan Lewis. For me, Frank Lewis, thanks for your company. Joe McGill will be back with you next Saturday. Francis Jones will be with you after the news. Donica, you're going to give us a couple of lines of Cuida Arte Lera, a flavour of what Brendan Kennelly did in the translation of it.
Macraga Danganho, Lada Vakaho, a county of Vatagig, Hugmaho Ladagig, Hugmakos Tangazut, Dili Samaherlat, Vado Vadalat, Dolidish Saxonic, She's Contalif Quote,
a love song,
Giger Kalagno.
My love, the first time I saw you from the top of the market, my eyes covered you, my heart went out to you, I left my friends for you, threw away my home for you. What else could I do? You got the best rooms for me, all in order for me, ovens burning for me, fresh trout caught for me, choice meat for me. In the best of beds I stretched, till milking time hummed for me. You made the whole world pleasing to me, white rider of love. And then in the heart-rending news, Art had been murdered. God's curse on you, Morris. God's curse on your treachery. You swept my man from me, the man of my children. Two children play in the house, a third lives in me. He won't come alive for me. My heart's wound. Why was I not with you when you were shot, that I might take the bullet in my own body? Then you'd have gone free, rider of the grey eyes, and followed them who'd murdered me. And then finally, final revenge, thanks to the poet and eternal love. Morris, because of you, my man is dead. Is there a man in Ireland to put a bullet through your head? Women, white women of the mill, I give my love to you for the poetry you made for Art O'Leary. Rider of the brown mare, deep woman rhythms of blood, the fiercest and the sweetest since time began, singing of this cry, I, woman, make for my man.
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.